It is a pleasure and an honor for me to introduce my friend and my colleague, Rabbi Julie Schoenfeld, to speak to us on the state of the RA. Julie lives the life of the RA 24/7 and is committed in every way to its well-being, to its present, honoring its past, and also charting a course for its future. In that context, she is uniquely the right person to be speaking to us about not only the state of the RA, about where she hopes to be taking it as well. It's a great pleasure and honor to introduce our colleague, Julie Schoenfeld.
Thank you, Jerry, and with all the many officers and volunteers who are here, I'll have more opportunity to thank you later, but I want, as always, to give a special thanks. You have been such a terrific partner, and all those 24/7 hours available as well, and have brought tremendous leadership to the organization in the past 2 years. So, thinking about the state of our organization, it always is remarkable to me when I speak to our colleagues around the world, I'm struck by the consistency of the voice of the conservative rabbi. I can listen to a conference call with speakers of many backgrounds and denominations and not know who's on the call by name, but I can recognize my colleagues by what they say. And it's remarkable that notwithstanding that we are probably one of the most heterogeneous groups in Jewish life in terms of our points of view, the heuristics by which we come to our conclusions have a very high level of consistency. And it's for this reason that our colleagues report to me that when they study in pluralistic environments, they always gravitate towards each other as chevruta. O chevruta, o mituta. Without partnership, without collegiality, what is our lives? Of all the parts of the RA that I love, one of the things that I treasure the most is being able to spend time talking to our colleagues about their futures and building a future that excites them. When thinking about the state of our 1,700 members, I can hear the words of my friend Marcelo Rittner. I don't know if he's here in the room. Julie, we cannot generalize. The conservative rabbinate spans every continent and Jewish community around the globe and every area of rabbinic practice. We can't generalize about one set of trends that mark the rabbinate in Sao Paulo and Jerusalem and London and New York. But around the world, conservative rabbis together are all providing an anchor for the entire Jewish community. Our rabbis in Israel continue to build a network of kehilot around the country, which in the way that they are open to all Jews, Basher Husham, wherever they are, most models the Zionist model for the Jewish people. The Seminario in Buenos Aires, which Jerry and I, and especially Jerry, have worked closely with over the past 2 years to restore their relationship and rebuild and revitalize their work with the local regional RA, is an incredible example of what it means to fashion a new Jewish idiom and a new Jewish vision, as Marshall Meyer did 4 decades ago, that speaks not to a generation of Jews who were assimilating from more religious parents, but a generation of Jews in Argentina who were themselves assimilated and for whom our movement created a very compelling vision through music, through prophetic answers to what was happening around them, a vision that not only built Judaism in Latin America, but has come to revitalize many of our congregations around the world. And it has actually struck me recently that in this time after the Pew survey, that looking at what went right in that building of Latin American Jewry that Marshall Meyer began and so many of our colleagues undertook after him will teach us a lot about where we ought to go in the next number of years. Unlike the 20th century development of North American Judaism, they were moving towards a place in which people could participate and feel a different level of engagement. We look forward to great things from the new seminary in Germany, Zacharias Frankel College, functioning in conjunction with the Ziegler School of Rabbinic Studies. And that German center, along with incredible work by our colleagues in several European countries, promises a continuing growth in conservative Masorti Judaism on that continent. And I'm looking at Brad and Kol HaKavod. Each of our communities faces certain characteristic challenges and embodies certain unique strengths. By degree of change, however, it feels to many of us that the largest challenges are here in North America, where the greatest number of our institutions, our adherents, and our rabbis live. And it is here that we have been most rocked by the change of different generational approaches to Judaism. All around us, we see a generational tension between people who could touch the Holocaust and the founding years and wars for survival of the State of Israel, and adult Jewish emerging leaders for whom that is part of a distant historical past. It is often said that the arc of history is long, but it bends toward justice. And if we were to tweak that just a little bit, the arc of Jewish history is long, but since the dawn of rabbinic Judaism, it keeps coming back to rabbinic Judaism, to the Shvil HaZahav, to the Jewish philosophy that we in the RA feel that we most emulate. The social and demographic and communications changes that we are grappling to make sense of are consequential, and we should undertake bold experiments to meaningfully engage with them. But the real Jewish story calls upon us, as rabbis, as leaders, to see these fluctuations in a broader perspective. And we have to sort through the ideas that entice us today to focus on those that are a part of our lasting legacy. One of the Rabbinical Assembly's most important roles as the collective voice of the conservative rabbinate is to help each of our members be a part of creating that lasting legacy. Not where do we want to go in the next 5 years, but what do we want to do today that will make the greatest contribution for the next 500 years? For me, the months since the Pew study were bookended by two very thoughtful, very challenging, but also very supportive and encouraging presentations by demographers associated with the study. In October, immediately following the study's release, Professor Jonathan Sarna joined the RA in an open conference call, and Alan Cooperman, who was the lead researcher on the study, joined the LCCJ in New York just last week. To quote Professor Sarna, he said, "Periodically, the Jewish community is jolted by distressing findings. In the 1930s, only a small number were getting a Jewish education, and people were abandoning shuls in huge numbers. Throughout the 40s and 50s, people predicted the demise of Reform and Orthodox Judaism, and many people believed that Jewish life in America was soon to be finished." But as Sarna went on to explain, the Reform movement went on to make important changes. They incorporated Kaplan's idea of Judaism as an evolving civilization. They grasped on powerfully to the idea of Zionism. They restored the Bar Mitzvah ceremony, which attracted immigrant Jews into the Reform fold. And they took the best of the civil rights and the women's rights movements as they developed and used that to energize their education and their youth groups. The Orthodox, as we know, undertook extensive training of laity as well as of the elites, so that several decades later they had built a spectacular cradle-to-grave education program that included yeshivot, day schools, and yeshiva university. But these changes, when we look back to them for examples, didn't happen overnight. This wasn't a one-year plan. This wasn't a five-year plan. This went on for decades. And those decades were the same ones during which the conservative movement was at its height. Even amidst the social catharses of the 20th century, America was a place that valued hierarchical structures, and the Jewish community was one that was separated from many of our fellow Americans, those of us who were American, by very high ethnic boundaries. Now the reverse is true on both scores. The society as a whole eschews hierarchical structures, and there is almost total permeability among groups, not only ethnic and religious, but others as well, in American society and in open Western-style societies in general. In response to these changes, we've witnessed our Reform and Orthodox brothers and sisters take widely divergent paths. Our Reform colleagues, following the trend of greater permeability of boundaries, have moved away from traditional definitions of personal status. And by contrast, the Orthodox have turned not only rightward, but inward. History teaches us that what might be expeditious in the short term might not prove to be the most advantageous in the long run. For now, the Reform movement, which can say it is open to mostly everybody and mostly everything, will logically and predictably capture a large percentage of adherents. That is part of what has happened in the space between our movement and our Reform co-religionists. As the Pew study shows, a sharply increasing number of Jews are establishing households with non-Jews, and therefore attracting those Jews and non-Jews into one of our institutions should be viewed as unambiguously positive. However, the Pew study also shows that indicators of Jewish attachment, identity, and observance remain significantly higher, indeed dramatically higher, in the conservative movement. One of the most explicit of those, that 73% of conservative Jews have a Jewish spouse, which means that 96% of those households, 96% of that 73%, will raise their children Jewish by religion, is a powerful demographic indicator, as opposed to intermarried couples where only 20% are going to raise their children Jewish by religion. In terms of the younger generation, the intermarriage differences between the movements are much starker than we realized, and dramatically illustrate the crucial role of our movement's work. I reached out last week to Dr. Stephen M. Cohen, who shared with me some analysis of the intermarriage data by year. And what he told me surprised me. If we look only at marriages that took place in the 21st century, that is to say between the year 2000 and 2013, we find 37% of conservative-raised Jews intermarried. In the same years, 2000 to 2013, 81% of Reform-raised Jews intermarried. So clearly, our movement and its impact is not merely a reflection of the older generation, but very much a reflection of what's happening in the present and into our future. The conservative movement has long been under the microscope, but it may be time for the community to start asking, what are we doing right, as well as what we might do better. On the Orthodox side of the analysis, there are also some interesting facts to look at. For all of the vitality in modern Orthodox education, they number only 3% of the Jewish population. The rest of the increase in Orthodox growth comes from the Haredi community, whose closed societies are something we would never countenance. We should admire, I think, the vitality of modern Orthodox education, but it is factually and logically indefensible for the community to assert that 3% of Jewish community signifies a stunning success and 18% is a failure, especially when that 18% shows such profound levels of commitment. And I want to take a moment here to say as well that when I read these numbers, for all the stresses that everybody in this room is under, these are your successes. We live in the same world as our Reform colleagues. We occupy the same space. Our children go to the same colleges. But the fact that people coming into adulthood raised, these aren't some vague other institutions they're talking about. These are the synagogues of people sitting in this room. That something that you are doing, a lot that you are doing, is having a very dramatic impact. A third of our school-age children are in day school. And while I acknowledge that there are many other very vibrant kinds of childhood education going on in the after-school setting, merely the financial reality that 30% in day school indicates shows a tremendous level of dedication. According to the 2010 Avichai study of young Jewish leaders in their 20s and 30s, 45% of today's Jewish institutional and communal leaders overall were raised as conservative Jews, with Reform Jews at the second coming in, however, 20 points later at 25%. And so, as Arnie pointed out, I think very well last night, the conservative movement is undisputedly still the largest and most significant leadership engine for the entire Jewish community. Moving away from Sarna's presentation to Alan Cooperman, the lead Pew researcher, as I mentioned, speaking to the LCCJ a week ago, he said, and the quote is a few sentences long, "The middle is shrinking, and this is happening to the middle of American Christianity, which is the bulk of the American population, and it is happening to the middle of American Judaism, which is where the conservative movement sits. What demographics can't capture in the survey is intellectual vitality, because we don't have metrics for that. The conservative movement has a great deal of intellectual vitality, and I think the conservative movement has indeed infused the Orthodox and Reform movements with some of its intellectual vigor." He continued, "I don't think that the future is dim at all. I think that your intellectual vitality is really what you're based in and what you can carry forward." End of quote. Alan Cooperman's second observation, that what we are known for and strongest in is our intellectual capital, is one that I think most of us would agree with. But his first observation, which is made all the time, that we are a part of the shrinking American religious middle, is not as apt as it appears. We are at the intellectual and philosophical center, Jewishly, in terms of striking a balance between tradition and change. But in terms of demands on people's time and money and energy, we are not at the middle of American religion. We are asking for a level of commitment that is completely unlike any centrist Christian American analog. Our task is about how to translate our ideas, our intellectual capital, which, as all the scholars recognized, reshaped everybody's Judaism from left to right, to translate that into the commitments, Jewish behavioral, civic, and communal commitments, because these are what are shaping people's lives. And these are, as that study I mentioned on intermarriage showed, these are what are actually crossing that generational divide. And the actual statistics of the people who identify as conservative Jews gives testament that they are doing these things. 3/4 of them are in married, and 1/3 of their kids are in day school. So if the modern Orthodox are succeeding at 3%, we cannot, for 1 minute, allow people to tell us that we are failing at 18%. And I know I've said this before, but I think that the insistence of some to label our movement as a failure is merely the product of people recognizing the level of resources and dedication that it takes to carry out committed, observant, reflective Judaism in an open society. And those people are scared that the community as a whole doesn't have the will to succeed, and they quarantine their anxiety in conservative Judaism, because if you can pronounce us a failure, despite overwhelming evidence to the contrary, then somehow the community as a whole is relieved of the burden to have the courage to pursue what we know can work. If people remember from grammar school or middle school, which was when I learned it, the Rudyard Kipling poem, If, right? If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you but make allowance for their doubting too, we should make allowance for doubting. There is much to improve, but the poet didn't write that for nothing. This is what is happening to us. Right? People are losing their heads and blaming it, placing that blame on us. And by any factual or logical standard, it is utter madness. It is our job as the rabbinical assembly, amidst that madness going on around us, to stay focused on our longer-term goals. O chavruta, o mituta. Here are a few examples of what the RA's officers, leadership, in conjunction with its staff, have been working on together in the past year to help us stay focused on those goals. I'm looking at Stuart Vogel. One of the most important projects of the past few years is the Commission on a Vital and Connected Rabbinate. Bill Lebo, on behalf of the staff, guided the development of this commission and its planning for the first year. And now all 5 rabbis who work with the Rabbinical Assembly are involved in the work of the commission. Its overwhelming goal is very simple and very profound. Rabbis feel very alone. And we want to do more to bring conservative rabbis closer to each other. For the vast majority of us who lead or teach in institutions with a set of religious standards, there is no easy answer, and there is no luminescent big idea that is going to take us out of the ambiguity in the trenches where we work. This year, placement was significantly better, but a rabbi's life and work still seems very uncertain compared to what it was 30 years or even 20 years ago. And while career transition is an important time, rabbis need the support of their fellows all through our careers. The Commission has directed us to work in five primary areas, and I'll name them briefly. Michal Springer is working with us to develop a partnership with the Center for Pastoral Education, along with Carrie Carter, to offer processing groups for rabbis that can be conducted long distance. And the first group actually had people from all over the world. David Shuck is chairing a transition to create a more lasting model for the work that Bill Lebo has been doing in counseling and to develop a network working closely together of trained senior rabbinic mentors. Gail Swedrow and Elliot Goldberg have recommended a set of outreaches to newly ordained rabbis. Steve Lindemann and Ellen Wallens Fields have done a thorough study of our regions and given us a set of recommendations on where we should go next to revive the regions. Finally, Jacob Herber, working with Charlie Schwartz, is leading us to take bold steps in terms of rabbinic education so the programs we offer will fulfill the mandate of our unique brand, helping conservative rabbis meet the demands of our institutions and to lead outside of the institution as well. Related to this, our continuing education offerings span a number of new topics. I especially want to call out the work we've done over the last 2 years. Now, David Baum, I'm looking at you. The work we've done over the last 2 years in terms of community organizing, championed by a group of community organizing trained rabbis who graduated over the past several years. Thanks to a grant from the Nathan Cummings Foundation, 40 rabbis were trained in community organizing this year. Our executive council devoted most of an entire, half of an entire day's meeting to community organizing. We are going to do a community organizing training on the West Coast in Los Angeles next fall, and please join us this Thursday at convention for a 3-hour long community organizing training here at the convention. Next year, we are planning an exciting new seminar, Lilmod Ulilamed, which will combine learning with top scholars along with intensive communications, coaching, and training. What we see above all is our programming not just as the opportunity to study with great teachers, but also to support our colleagues, each of us, to become the greatest and most effective teacher that we can be. And this is where we see the Rabbinical Assembly making a very lasting impact on the future of our philosophy and of the Jewish community. The work of the Commission is very inward focused, but I'll name a few highlights of some of the several ways in which we work very intensively on the outward focus of the Rabbinical Assembly to bring our Torah out into the public. Sidur Lev Shalem is on schedule to be completed in the next fiscal year, having reduced the production time from 12 years for the Machzor down to 4 for the Sidur. First Fruits, the preliminary Friday night edition, was purchased by 30 congregations, and we had to go into 2 additional reprints. The CJLS produced 6 tshuvot, but even more, in a quiet but hopefully very powerful internal process, has revised its operating procedure so that the CJLS every year will produce a definitive docket, will place limits on the amount of time that papers can be in process, and has a vetting committee to ensure that papers that are submitted from outside the docket are actually relevant to the future of our movement as a whole, and thereby worthy of the effort of the committee and of the larger RA. I personally spent a significant amount of time working with our colleagues in Israel to find a compromise on the Kotel, including substantial research in matters of Israeli administrative law, in the hopes of delivering to our constituents what they really deserve in a first step forward for recognition and religious freedom in Israel. the efforts on matters of religious freedom, including issues of conversion, any number of pieces, civil marriage, are too numerous to discuss here, but it's well established that we are there, the RA, at those tables and making a significant difference. Most weeks, at least one and sometimes several statements or letters go out on issues for which the RA has a resolution. There are numerous phone calls attempting to influence the direction of communal dialogue on issues we care about. We message strongly and we endeavor to raise the level of discussion in the community as a whole. None of this would be possible without the resolutions, which in a few minutes is the next thing we're going to do in this meeting. So I ask you all to please stay and help us establish the most favorable resolutions docket that we can for the next year. And I want to close with a quick story. Is Steve Abraham in the room? There you are. Okay. So it's about Omaha, Nebraska. In January, I had the pleasure of flying to Omaha for Meyer Kripke's 100th birthday. As we know, he celebrated his 100th birthday and then died, Rabbi Kripke of blessed memory, just a few weeks before Pesach. There were actually two smachot in the community that weekend. One was Rabbi Kripke's birthday, and the other was the bat mitzvah of a cherished student in the community's small day school. And the bat mitzvah gave a lot of nachas to the community by delivering her Devar Torah in Hebrew. Rabbi Abraham. Now, the story that some of us remember about Kripke Tower is that Rabbi Kripke called JTS at a certain point, which was how it really came to be understood that he was able to make such a gift. He had been very much under the radar. And he told the development department that he wished to repay the seminary for the fact that they had paid for his wedding in the seminary courtyard the year he was ordained, 1937, during the Great Depression. Now, Rabbi Kripke became a very wealthy man through a happy accident of fate. But he became a person who wanted to be very generous towards the seminary because of what the administration did and how they treated him when he was just a person graduating rabbinical school without even enough money for a chuppah. And I look around the room, and I know that these are the stories of each of your communities, of the kindness that you show to people, and the love, and the devotion, and the dedication. And while I can't be exactly sure, I don't have nevuah, I don't know how it's going to happen, but I know that the future of our movement lies in what we will do for that bat mitzvah girl who gave her Devar Torah a few weeks ago in Hebrew.